The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
And thanks for being here on a Tuesday afternoon, and we really appreciate it. A lot to do today. Yesterday was insane. Today may be just the same. Let's get right to it. Some headlines that we've been waiting to hear about, and what is going on with Miles Brennan. Well, Miles has a significant lower body injury. Yes, he is questionable Saturday for South Carolina. That's a tough break for the LSU Tigers, who have already lost two games this year. Other quarterbacks on the roster, who you like? Freshman, TJ Finley. Freshman, Max Johnson. Walker Kinney, AJ Aycock. Brennan has taken every snap this year. Meanwhile, Lane Kiffin, struggling. Looked good a couple of weeks ago against Kentucky. Not since. And it looks like COVID continues to spread through that program. Remember, Kiffin said last week he wasn't sure they would even have enough players to take on Arkansas. Will he have more this week when Auburn comes to town? And what's going on in Gainesville? Adam Rittenberg reports 31 positive COVID-19 tests during the month of October, 25 from last week's breakout. Gators had six previous. Remember, that was the model program. So many people were pointing toward Dan Mullen's operation as being the one that had seemingly withstood the difficulties so many others had had. If that's the number of positive, you can only imagine, and I have, and others have as well, the number of people down there who could potentially be in quarantine. The good news, if there is any, Gators don't play this weekend. But the bad news, they have a lot of important games coming up, including one against Georgia in a few weeks. Meanwhile, the Crimson Tide continue to be the number two team in the country, and everybody's wondering, how did they become a passing team, and how Alabama turned the SEC into a passing league? The Athletic with a deep dive. Look at some of these numbers. Mac, 1,518 yards. Tua, who, by the way, was named the starter of the Dolphins earlier today with 1,300. That was in 19, 18, not far behind that. Jalen considerably far behind that. So it really is interesting. Sarkisian has really opened up the passing lanes for the Crimson Tide. So we have a lot to do today. We thank you for being a part of the program. Oh, yeah, there's one more headline. Damontae Coxey leaves the team, will enter the draft. How could I forget about him, the Memphis wide receiver? They're coming off a huge win over UCF. Remember when everybody wanted to talk about UCF? Not anymore. Big show on tap, Brandon Marcello. We'll get his take on the Florida situation, the Auburn situation. He covered the Tigers. Teddy Greenstein covers the Big Ten. Stuart Mandel on the deep dive on Alabama. Nick Suss in Mississippi. What up there? But first, your phone calls. And the number, it's always the same, 855-252. Actually, number is 242. Only I think of it as 252. The number is 855-242-7285. Let's get right to it and see what's going on. And Greg starts us off in the state of Florida. Hello, Greg. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Greg, we're doing well. Thank you.
Well, the thing with I'm a Gator fan. The thing with Florida was it didn't surprise me that they had the COVID outbreak. I was afraid of it because when the governor, in his stupidity, just told everybody it was okay to just do whatever they wanted, I was afraid that was going to happen. Because I also was afraid of all the other schools in the state of Florida.
Yeah, I would say the governor, Governor Ron DeSantis, is probably has the, and this will be the only time I'll ever connect the word liberal and Ron DeSantis. He probably has the most liberal policy on COVID in the state, and he was one of the he was slow to shut things down, early to open things up. He had been at one time widely praised by many, many people, but I have no idea whether that is the issue or not. It did take the Gators an awfully long time to start having problems, but they have serious issues right now.
And then one more thing, Bo, about with Georgia, I listened the whole offseason, and I listened to your show, how all these people from Georgia came on and said that when Jamie Newman left, that, oh, he couldn't handle the competition.
Oh, yeah.
He got beat out by JT Daniels and all this crap. And they impugned this guy and made it sound like he was a quitter and couldn't handle the competition. Well, how could that have happened if JT Daniels was never cleared to play? And if JT Daniels was so much better, why is he not playing now? So
that is a really good question. And, you know, I will tell you, having been a beat reporter in my time, often the theories that the coaching staff wants to get out there they propagate those stories, whether they're true or not. And sadly, in today's world, whatever they want to get out gets out, and fans are gullible and they buy it because they read it. And that you know, you're right. Jamie Newman got made out to be a quitter, and I bet they would like to have Jamie Newman back right now.
Yeah, and then I also thought that it sounded like to me that they double booked, that they made promises to Newman, and they also made promises to Daniels. And that's why Jamie Newman just said, you know what, I'm out of here if you can't even tell me the truth.
Yeah, I think you may be right about that. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Good to have you on. Cat Daddy back on the program after his team beat Auburn. What about it, Cat Daddy?
Sweet Caroline, no time could be better. Oh, Mr. Feinbaum, Big Paul looking good, sounding good. Yeah, the Gamecocks, and we're going to beat LSU. I hate to hear the quarterbacks out, though, but I got a feeling we're going to do it again. We are back, Mr. Feinbaum, and Lord have mercy, I am a happy man.
Well, you know, you're always a happy guy, but when the Gamecocks win, you're quadruply happy.
Oh, yeah, walking on cloud nine, I'll tell you that. I hate for them Georgia fans. I told y'all to pull out that Brooke Benton song, because Alabama and Clemson, the best two teams in the country. Lord, I hate to have to say that, but it's true. But I love what the Arkansas team did. Texas A&M's on a roll. Only lost one game. What's wrong with Tennessee, Big Paul?
Well, what's wrong with Tennessee is they don't have a quarterback. And when you don't have a quarterback, you seem to self-destruct. And I'm not blaming him for everything. His line did not block. That great line we heard about, remember, 2 weeks ago, that was going to contain the Georgia defense. I think Jeremy Pruitt has some issues up there on Rocky Top.
You got it right, that offensive line. They couldn't block a midget. I'm telling you, something bad. I hope they get it together, though. But right now, we here in Columbia are celebrating. We're happy. And it's Palmetto Moonshine for everybody.
It sounds good to me. We did not hear from this guy yesterday because he's too busy licking his wounds after running his mouth the entire week about how Georgia was going to beat Alabama. Good afternoon, Red Dog.
Keep a dog down. And let me say something, Paul. Why can Nick Saban get cleared quicker than Donald Trump from COVID?
Do you want me to? Hey, hold on. Let's do one at a time. Do you want me to?
He gets our players.
Red Dog, hold on a second. Let me answer your question. You know the difference between the two?
I can't wait.
One had COVID and one didn't. That's the reason why Nick Saban was cleared.
He had a positive test.
And he took three more and it was negative. So that's called a false positive, Red Dog.
Sure,
kind of like Kirby Smart's record against Nick Saban.
Nobody's beat Saban.
Oh, I don't know. Hugh Freeze has twice. Les Miles has a couple of times. Gus Malzahn has three times.
And where are they at now?
Gus Malzahn's still at Auburn.
Yeah, we kicked his butt a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is we'll see old Roll Tide Roll. Hey, we may have not won the game, but I got all my teeth. Go Dogs, Paul.
You know, I don't know anyone in Alabama that would want to trade places with your dental situation right now, Red Dog. Let's grab a break here. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Red Dog has spoken, and then he swallowed his tongue. We'll be right back.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Yeah, we welcome you back, and James is calling next. Hey, James, go right ahead.
Paul, did you miss me?
Matter of fact, I did. I've been anticipating this call for a couple of days.
Okay. I suppose you recall our conversation before the season started.
Yes, I do, and I remember I was the one being patient, and you were spitting the truth.
Well, at least that version of the truth. First, let me say congratulations to Cat Daddy and all the rest of the Gamecocks over in Columbia and throughout that part of the country. They're due congratulations. I'm going to ask you the same question he asked you about Tennessee. What is wrong over on the Plains? I mean, besides the fact that they only got one senior on their offense, what's their problem?
Well, let's take the offense first and talk about Bo Nix. And as much as I have wanted to believe that he was going to be an epic SEC quarterback, I really haven't seen too many signs of it.
Okay, whose fault is that? Is it Bo Nix's?
Well, ultimately, you have to be developed and coached, and because I think he has the talent.
Okay, so what you tell me is what I already understand. It starts at the top.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you tell me something, James, Who was the last quarterback that Gus Malzahn made better?
According to everybody I hear, the pundits that I hear on the radio, I don't think he's made one better.
That's his job. That's what he's supposed to be doing.
That's what you're supposed to do as a coach. You're supposed to have improvement. Auburn starts slow. They search for themselves during the course of the season. Sometimes they finish well, but if they don't find whatever their identity is, they don't finish well. And it all goes back to coaching. I don't know that there are any. There are answers, but I'm not sure we're going to find them. Let's see if we can find those five victories or seven victories that you claim they had. I don't know that we can find seven. We're two.
Well, no.
Right now.
Yeah, right now with two losses, and you know, we'll quit worrying about whether Arkansas was a win or a loss. It was a win. And when you look ahead, we know who's left. There is Texas A&M. There is LSU. There's Alabama. I mean, that's just from the West. You have Tennessee on there.
Still got Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Now,
yeah, well, I'm not too concerned about either one of those.
You don't think Ole Miss, if they, in other words, you think their situation over there with the coronavirus is such that
I think Ole Miss, based on what I hear, is in bad shape.
Okay. And I don't think we're going to have any problem with Mississippi State.
No.
So you got us at 4-2. We can't beat Bama. We're not going to beat A&M, I don't believe. Not if they hold like they
are.
So
I think it really comes down to can you win the LSU game? And I think LSU is an enigma right now. We have no idea what they're going to be in a couple of weeks.
And then Tennessee.
Tennessee's almost a similar situation.
Don't you think we're looking at 5-5 instead of 6-4?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. All right, about like we've been being, except we don't have the cupcakes that we can pad our schedule with.
That is correct. Hey, thank you very much. Charles from Unreal Town is up next.
No, it's still real town.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't give you my idea on why Alabama and Nick Saban became a passing team. All right? You know what the answer is?
I do not.
You probably don't, but I'm going to tell you my answer. Tua Tagovailoa.
Hold on. Who did you say?
Don't make me say that again. Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua Tagovailoa.
That's close enough.
That's pretty good, really.
Well, he knew what a talent he was.
Just call him Tua. You don't have to say his last name anymore.
Huh?
You don't have to say
No, I didn't say Tua. Everybody knows who I'm talking about.
Sure.
So I think he's one of the reasons. Might be the main reason. Nick Saban recognized his talent. He knew what a passer he could be at Alabama to go with his great running game. So he had a great running game and a great passing game. He's nearly about been unbeatable ever since then. So he's smart. He knows when to change things. He knows when to put a player in that can.
So what about your guy, Charles?
Huh?
What about your coach?
Well, he's on the way out, I hope. You know what? I don't understand that. If Auburn is serious about football, they will fire Gus Malzahn and forget about his buyout clause. That don't matter. Getting rid of him is the important thing.
And let me ask you this, Charles.
They need another coach.
Assuming that you became the athletic director, which I think would be great.
Who is Auburn's athletic director, by the way? He ain't doing nothing.
His name is Alan Green.
Alan Green. What in the heck is he doing? He can't take no credit for the basketball team.
No, he didn't hire either one of these coaches.
What about the president over there? He care about football?
Every time I talk to Alan Green, he's defending Gus Malzahn.
He's crazy. He needs to go follow Gus out of town. He ain't no athletic director, not for all, but anyway. They need to forget about that old buyout clause. Go ahead and fire his sorry butt. Get him out of there.
Well, one last question, Charles. If I made you the athletic director for a day, and who would you hire?
I'd hire a good coach, I bet you that. That's what's wrong with Auburn now. They ain't got nobody looking for no coach. They ain't got no search committee. They don't know who's a good coach, who's a bad coach. If they did, they wouldn't hire Gus Malzahn to start with. He ain't no good. Wasn't no good when they got over there. That little tricky offense worked for a year or two, but they caught on to that so fast it was pitiful.
Okay, Charles. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Hugh in North Carolina. Hello, Hugh.
Good afternoon, Paul. Two things real quick. First of all, my favorite guest that you have on your show is Danny Sheridan. Man, he shares wisdom that goes well beyond what the average caller can provide. And I've thought about his statement about what was going to happen this year in the Southeastern Conference and why. And, man, he called it exactly right. He's a remarkably smart person.
He is. He really is.
Here's what I want to talk to you about. It's the futility of a lot of the practices we see going on with testing and this whole business of contact tracing. The important factors, as I see it, are the percentage of positives that require hospitalization, and the second one is the percentage of death rate for those that go in there, because now, over the last 8 months, we're handling these situations a lot better than we were in March. And clearly at this point, this virus, in terms of killing the population or any part of it, is a poor third behind heart attacks and cancer. Now, when you stop and consider the mistake rate of testing, and then when that happens, you take a contact percentage of people out of commission until they clarify the testing, it seems pretty draconian and a senseless waste of time. I know this. We have 11 beds in our local Watauga County Hospital. Since the 20,000 college kids came back to campus the 1st of September, we've had about 1,000 of them show up positive. One young man, a freshman, died from complications, but to the best of my knowledge, none of the rest of that 1,000 have ever required hospitalization. So what do we glean from this, Paul? What are we doing? When the World Health Trade Organization, the
WHO,
World Health Organization,
correct,
when they come out and say that these shutdowns are counterproductive, and the CDC, our own agency, says that 71% of the people that test positive wore masks all the time, and 14% did most of the time, so much for wearing the face mask. At this point, I'm having a hard time coming up for a practical, sound reason why healthy young people can't gather in any kind of numbers they want to celebrate whatever they want to celebrate.
Well, I think you, for the most part, they are doing it anyway, so that's part of the issue.
I think I predicted that to you back in June. You know, there's clear, unrefutable evidence that herd immunity has been the primary weapon to control all sorts of virus infections since the beginning of human development. If this was not the case, the human species would have vanished many years ago. Laboratory-produced vaccines, it is true, are a valuable scientific effort to help natural herd immunity. However, they also are not 100% effective in stopping the spread of targeted viruses. We sold a bill of goods around the world about shutdowns and masks, and we're now reaping the harvest of record numbers of hospitalizations and deaths over most of Europe, with the exception of Sweden, who's in the best shape economically and medically of any country in all of Europe. Paul, at some point, we got to deal honestly with the empirical evidence and quit kidding ourselves about what's going on.
Hugh, thank you. Always good to have you on. Appreciate it.
Goodbye, Paul.
Goodbye. We are heading to a break. Thanks to, it seems like we've been here a while, but we've only been here 28 minutes. A lot of guests coming up, including Brandon Marcello. He once covered Auburn and then moved on. He's next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Busy show, and nobody better to bring in than Brandon Marcello. We were just listening to Gus Malzahn during the break, and I cannot tell you how many times over these last 10 years I have asked Brandon Marcello the same question about Gus Malzahn. But, Brandon, it just never seems to change that much. I know you've moved on from covering Auburn, and congratulations for that, because I would imagine it gets tired. You get tired of writing the same thing over and over again, don't you?
Yeah, and this week I was doing a review of the SEC entering this midpoint of the season, which is crazy to think we're already getting near the midpoint of the season. But, I mean, listen, Auburn's been a complete disappointment so far this season, and a lot of it's on the offensive side, which returned a lot of players, and now they're better at running back, and yet they're worse offensively, and to be quite honest, should be 1-3 right now with a loss to Arkansas, if not for the referees blowing things there in Auburn a couple of weeks ago. It's a very strange situation there.
So, having been in this cauldron so many times, how do you see it playing out? I ask you that because Auburn fans are growing increasingly unhappy, if not furious.
Well, I've long said that unless this year is a complete disaster, say they have something that's not just a losing season, but something that goes along the lines of like 3-7 or maybe 4-6, but I think it had to be like 3-7 or something below. Gus Malzahn's fine this season. He will not be fired, but he would go into next year on the hot seat, and that's because he beat Alabama last season. And when he beats Alabama, history has shown us it usually buys him 2 years, and then next year he gets Georgia and Alabama both at home, and if he happens to knock one or both off, then he's safe again for another year or two. But what you're seeing right now with that offense, it's to a point where if things do not improve in this upcoming game for them, then Gus needs to start, in my opinion, start thinking about taking the offense away from Chad Morris, because Morris's track record is quite horrible in the SEC. He averaged 17.4 and 17.3 points per game against SEC opponents while Arkansas. And now at Auburn, he's averaging 21.3 points per game, which is a full 10 points less than Auburn averaged last season when Gus Malzahn was calling the plays. And again, Auburn has its receivers back. It's better at the running back position with Tank Bigsby. And you have a second-year starter at quarterback instead of a true freshman. So why isn't the offense better? You got to look not necessarily at the personnel. You got to look at the person who is scheming and calling plays on game days. And I think Chad Morris deserves a lot of the blame, but also a lot of the criticism and the questions about what's going to happen in the future.
Let me move on from Auburn, because it is a merry-go-round. Alabama, with its huge win, you've looked at the SEC, you've evaluated. Is Alabama standalone this year? Give us your take.
Yeah, I think so in the SEC. I mean, I said in the preseason, Paul, you heard me, I thought Alabama was just going to drill everybody in the SEC, win practically every game by double digits. The game against Georgia was not surprising to me because of Stetson Bennett the fourth at Georgia. I see him every game missing several throws, and he did it again. And that was the difference in that game. Mac Jones hit the big throws because he's an elite quarterback. Stetson Bennett didn't, because he's not an elite quarterback. And I would say this, could you imagine Georgia's team if they had Mac Jones at quarterback? That team would not only challenge for the SEC title, but I think they would have a legit shot at winning the national championship this year. But because they don't have an elite quarterback, they're not going to do it. And Alabama, in a lot of ways, as I'm sure a lot of people have pointed out, looks like the 2019 LSU team, because of what Mac Jones is doing at quarterback, the two great receivers in Jalen Waddell and Devontae Smith, Najee Harris running the ball. But the defense is very inconsistent. But when it comes down to crunch time in the big moments, Nick Saban and co. have found ways to make some adjustments and shut down opponents when they need to. Ole Miss in the final 7 minutes, and then, of course, Saturday in the second half when they completely shut out Georgia after the Bulldogs led them 24-20 at halftime. So to me, I think Alabama's going to run away with the SEC this season, and they're really not going to be challenged until they face an elite quarterback with receivers. And to be quite honest, that's not going to be Georgia as long as Stetson Bennett's the quarterback. So if they face Georgia again in the SEC championship game, I expect a repeat of what we saw Saturday. But if they face Florida, even though Florida's defense has been very, very inconsistent, once again, they have, I think, an elite quarterback and an elite passing scheme and an elite coach who does a great job of scoring even against really good defenses, and that could cause a problem for Alabama. If not, I don't think they'll face a really tremendous challenge until they get to the playoff and play a Clemson or an Ohio State that has, again, an elite quarterback and elite receivers.
Brandon, you mentioned Florida. They're off this week, but stories coming out of there about their COVID situation. I mean, really everything has gone wrong since Dan Mullen talked about filling the swamp. What are you hearing about the current state of the Florida program, especially in relation to COVID?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you saw the numbers today. That's 25 players that are dealing with COVID-19 since this latest round of tests. And, you know, it kind of puts into question what they can do going into next week and beyond as they try to get back into practice mode. Not even talking about playing, but getting practice mode and remaining in shape and keeping that mental edge. Because, listen, these last 2 weeks of time for Florida, very important to kind of turn that thing around on defense, because they're coming off, obviously, a devastating loss but to Texas A&M, but also there's a lot of holes in that defense and things that they could fix and are not able to quite do that because of this COVID outbreak. And I think that's a big thing to me, more so than them missing some games, because they're going to be able to make up a game, as we've already seen with the postponement against LSU. But, you know, what they're missing out on right now are workouts and coaching time with their coaches, and they need that defensively. How does it affect the offense as well? Do they come out rusty? I say that because, you know, Notre Dame dealt with some issues and some cancellations and postponements and had to kind of not play for 2 weeks, and they came out pretty rusty 2 weeks ago, and then that continued into Louisville, and they only won 12-7 against a Louisville team with a horrible defense. And I think them being off during that time really affected their mojo a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see how Florida kind of tries to bounce back from this when they finally do get back on the field to practice. I'm very interested to read what the reporters are going to be reporting when they do get to practice, because this is a team that needs to improve, and this practice time is very crucial.
And Brandon, if you do the math, and there's a lot of speculation out there, with that many players testing positive and you start multiplying it with contact tracing, I think a lot of people are sitting out right now, which, you know, may not be critical for the rest of this week, but ultimately it catches up. Let me ask you about Tennessee before you go, because everything was swimmingly until the second half against Georgia, and now it really is starting to come undone a little bit, or it seems like it, with all the moves over the weekend, the Brumbaugh firing, and here comes Alabama. What's going on in Rocky Top?
Same old, same old, it seems like. I really thought that they had turned the corner. Watching them in the first half against Georgia, I was like, you know what? They're probably going to lose this game, but at least they're being competitive once again. They're competitive in the East. And then ever since then, they've been outscored 61-7, as we know, and Kentucky just absolutely dominated them. I know everybody's focusing on the two pick sixes, but that defense just really kept them at bay otherwise as well. They've got a quarterback issue, and I don't know if they necessarily have an answer on the roster right now. And, I mean, I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's in trouble this season, but he'll be in trouble next year if things continue to go down this road this year and he goes into the next season going, hey, you need to start contending in the SEC East. Maybe not win it, but be in the top two, top three, and that's difficult to do with Georgia and Florida with the way they're recruiting. And to be quite frank, the coaches that they have there, I still think Jeremy Pruitt's a really good coach, but, man, you just keep thinking Tennessee's going to turn it around, and then it doesn't happen. It's almost like time has just completely passed Tennessee by, that the window is gone. Phillip Fulmer's not coming back as coach unless, you know, he pulls a Barry Alvarez and reinstates himself as an interim coach at some point, which I wouldn't doubt. But I'll say this. Tennessee has just got to upgrade that quarterback position. They've got a great offensive line. The defense is okay. They can win some games, but to be embarrassed the way they were at home against Kentucky, that's completely unacceptable, and the head coach needs to take responsibility for that. And, you know, we saw our first scapegoat with a defensive line coach being fired, and you'll see that more and more, I think, here in the SEC, because I don't think you're going to see really maybe any head coaching firings this year. But you will see a lot of movement with assistant coaches just to kind of, you know, save face and show a PR move to make maybe fans happy temporarily during this pandemic.
Brandon, thank you very much. Always one of our great guests. Come back soon. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Paul. Thanks, man.
Wow. Always get a lot of nuggets there, and we really appreciate Brandon for being here. We are heading to a break. We'll go to the Big Ten next hour. Hugh Freeze beat Syracuse last weekend. He's undefeated, and he'll join us tomorrow. We are coming right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome you back on a Tuesday afternoon. Rick is up next. Good afternoon, Rick.
Hey, Mr. Feinbaum, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you. Hope you are.
This is your buddy from the Mark and Brian of I-95.
Oh, sure. I remember you well.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that the Gus Malzahn Auburn football review is the biggest joke I've ever seen. They show 6 positive plays on the first half, and then 6 positive plays on the second half, and then they have something that doesn't have anything to do with the game and show that. And I just wanted to know what your opinion was, because Nick Saban shows every opponent play that they score a touchdown, and you would think Auburn wins 100-0. On every game according to his show, and I just want to know what your opinion
you brought something up that I think I don't know because I don't really watch these shows anymore. When I covered college football as a beat back in the day, you had to watch those shows because most of the games were not on TV. So I remember sitting there at a newspaper on a Sunday afternoon, you know, waiting for those things to come on, I had been to the game, but it was my first chance to get some replays in the coach's comments. Now those shows are just something to do to pay the bills, and a lot of times they'll do them right after the game. And I'm glad they're still on. Some people maybe don't see what the rest of us see, but. Yeah, I mean, I think you should always be transparent. Nobody, if you lose a game, everyone knows you lost the game. Tell the audience why you didn't win.
Well, another thing, would you like a copy of any game that I have in the past? I gave you that list when I met you last year.
Yeah, I've got it. Let me look it over again before you have to go through the trouble. Right? How far back do we go, if I could ask you that?
Well, I even go back to 1931, but I have in a row from the 73 Notre Dame to the present, and I've got 60 Bear Bryant shows.
Okay.
If it was on TV and Alabama won, I have the game.
Okay, well, I will get back. Rick, thank you very much. It's always great to hear from you, and I'll be in touch with you. Those Bear Bryant shows were priceless. Watching him early on a Sunday morning open up a bag of potato chips was pretty amazing. Some stories about that. We're taking a break. 1 hour down, 3 to go. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.